LA has the largest jail system in the country.
You got people that been in jail just like one time in their life, can't get nothing because of whatever mistake they made.
I stole some ground turkey because I wanted to feed my family. We was hungry.
Off the Block, stories tracing the path from city block to cell block and back. Find it now at kcrw.com or subscribe on iTunes.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and welcome to Bookworm. Today, my guest is a novelist, Affinity Konar. She's making her debut with Little Brown with a novel called Mischling. There are many words that people have been using: intense, powerful. Affinity's editor uses the word shattering, and I think that is a very good word to use. The novel, Mischling, is about two of the twins who were kept in the zoo at Auschwitz that was overseen by Dr. Joseph Mengele, and it is about their bond. It's well known that twins know what each other are feeling, sometimes over great distances. Mm-hmm. And the terrifying Dr. Mengele became interested in knowing whether if you tortured one twin, would the other be in pain? Could you in some way sever the bond? You first read about Dr. Mengele and his horrifying experiments. What was the book called?
The book was called Children of the Flames by Lucette Lugnato and Sheila Cohn-Deckel. That was when I first read about that specific story, but at the same time, I'm finding this true of many people as the book ventures out, that Mengele is just sort of a name that you grow up with a strange awareness of, even as you don't know everything that he was doing.
He became known as the Angel of Death. Mengele has an aspect of terror, partially because he wanted to be called uncle. He would present his concern for the children as a paternal concern, and yet he was now kind and now vicious. You've very brilliantly attempted to put Mengele in the background behind the relationship of the two girls. What their names are, Pearl and
Stasha.
Stasha. You named them, yes?
Yes, I did.
And how did you choose their names?
I always knew that I wanted Pearl's name to be precious. I wanted Stasha to be able to evoke her like a gem at every turn. In fact, there's a lot of passages that I cut that were just Stasha riffing on the preciousness of that name. And then the name Stasha itself, I was drawn to the sound of it. It sounded, I mean, this will sound odd, but to me, when I was writing her passages, I was always thinking about riding a horse. And there was this just sort of clip-clop, clip-clop. And that's also just reflected in her name for me, personally.
What does Mischling mean?
Mischling is a very charged term. It means mixed blood. It was used by the Third Reich to classify people. It's a very terrifying word for me to confront even now. And it was also just strange growing up with an awareness of it, because it sounds so innocent and lilting. And I tried to just confront that word throughout the novel. Its meaning changes over time. And then in the end, Stasha rejects it entirely.
It is terrifying. It's like the word Jewess in a certain way. Words that we no longer think to use or that have been supplanted by other words. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that when I was a child growing up in my parents' house, that book, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, exerted a strange fascination for me. I'd read it almost as if it were a forbidden book, and I read it to scare myself. You are a Jew of Polish descent. Did you have that same kind of titillated horror from this material?
I definitely can't deny that that's part of why I was drawn to it, and drawn to it from a very young age, yes. I feel like I completely relate to the titillation that you're describing growing up with.
So what difficulties did you face writing this novel? You worked on it for 10 years.
Yeah, I feel like writing this book wasn't so much writing sometimes as it was a constant sort of self-interrogation and negotiating what I could possibly write in this book. I couldn't shake the subject matter. It had been haunting me for years. I think it's a terrible thing to feel drawn to something that you also feel like you can't touch and you can't possibly do justice to.
It's a book that can't help but be written in a heightened language. Often the language is extremely poetic. There are pages where I found myself saying that if Sylvia Plath were taking on this subject matter, it might sound something like this. In other words, intensity is the job of the prose. Mm-hmm. Also, to stay calm would do injury to the subject, yes?
Oh, I believe so. I felt very deeply early on that if I were to write this book, that was going to be my entry point, the language.
So we're talking about 1944, Auschwitz. Let's hear the opening. This is Affinity Konar reading from the first chapter of her novel, Mischling. The speaker is one of the two twins, Stasha, and the title of the chapter is World After World.
We were made once, my twin Pearl and me. Or, to be precise, Pearl was formed and I split from her. She embossed herself on the womb. I copied her signature. For 8 months, we were afloat in amniotic snowfall, two rosy mittens resting on the lining of our mother. I couldn't imagine anything grander than the womb we shared, but after the scaffolds of our brains were ivoried and our spleens were complete, Pearl wanted to see the world beyond us. And so, with newborn pluck, she spat herself out of our mother. Though premature, Pearl was a sophisticated prankster. I assured myself that it was just one of her tricks. She'd be back to laugh at me. But when Pearl failed to return, I lost my breath. Have you ever had to live with the best part of yourself adrift, stationed at some unknowable distance? If so, I am sure you're aware of the dangers of this condition. After my breath left me, my heart followed suit, and my brain ran with an unthinkable fever. In my fetal pinkness, I faced this truth. Without her, I would become a split and unworthy thing, a human incapable of love. That is why I followed my sister's lead and allowed the doctor's hands to tear me out and smack me and hold me to the light. Let us note that I never cried during the ruptures of this unwanted transition. Not even when our parents ignored my wish to be named Pearl, too. I became Stasha instead. And with the chore of birth complete, we entered the world of family and piano and book, of days that baffled by in beauty. We were so alike. We were always dropping marbles from the window onto the paving stones and watching them descend the hill with our binoculars, just to see how far their little lives would take them. That world, teeming with awe, ended too. Most worlds do. But I must tell you, there was another world we knew. Some say it was the world that made us the most. I want to say that they are wrong, but for now, let me tell you that our entry into this world began in our 12th year of life, when we were huddled side by side in the back of a cattle car. During that journey of 4 days and four nights, we cheated our way into survival under Mama's and Zeta's instruction. For sustenance, we passed an onion back and forth and licked its yellow hide. For entertainment, we played the game Zeta made for us, a game called The Classification of Living Things. In this form of charades, you had to portray a living thing, and the players had to name the species, the genus, the family, and so on, all the way to the encompassing brilliance of a kingdom. The four of us passed through so many living things in the cattle car. We postured from bear to snail and back. It was important, Zeta emphasized in his thirst-cracked voice, that we organize the universe to the best of our two human ability. And when the cattle car finally came to a stop, I stopped my charade too. The way I remember it, I was in the middle of trying to convince Mama that I was an amoeba. It's possible that I was portraying some other living thing, and that I'm remembering it as an amoeba now only because I felt so small in that moment, so translucent and fragile. I cannot be sure. Just as I was about to admit defeat, the door to the cattle car rolled open.
Affinity Konar reading the opening paragraphs from her novel, Mishling. This voice, and it is a voice more than it is a person, is speaking from memories of the womb, and it's almost as if the womb is a place as extraordinary to her as Auschwitz, as strange, as unimaginable, and as unforgettable. That meant that the voices in this book had to be able to remember the things that other people forget. Mm-hmm. Many people left the camps unable to retrieve what had happened to them. These are two girls who are giving us the gift of their recollection, and the book is not a book of memory loss. It is a book of memory, yes?
Yes, absolutely.
Why did you decide on that?
I mean, it's interesting to hear you speak of the womb as another world that's before, I mean, she mentions before Auschwitz, and it's just as extraordinary. Because to me, that title, that chapter title of World After World is important. It alludes to the fact that I wanted Stasha to keep moving through this terrible world of Auschwitz, always thinking of another one. And so it felt very natural to me that she be this collector of memories in a certain way, that she needed to leap from world to world in order to endure.
Now, they're based on a particular set of twins. Who are they?
Well, they're not necessarily based on them in particular, but there are two twins, Eva and Miriam Moses. It was more the spirit of connectiveness between those two that inspired me. I felt almost just sheltered by their bond alone.
Like, they were real twins.
They were real twins.
And they wrote a book about the experience?
They wrote a book, and Eva currently runs a museum in Indiana devoted to the memories of the twins of Auschwitz.
Now, why twins? What was this doctor looking for? What did he think he would find?
Well, there were, as you mentioned, those experiments about just how much pain of separation the twin could handle. There were experiments like that where he would separate them and very deliberately seek to study in a very sadistic fashion how one would endure that split. And then there was also just the genetic component of experimenting on one twin and keeping the other one intact to compare the effects of his experiments.
These are particularly precious to him because they both have blonde hair. They lack the blue eyes of an Aryan, and at one point he puts drops in the eyes of one of the twins, saying, by next week, this eye will be blue. Of course, by next week, this eye is blind. He also takes one of her ears away. He causes her deafness. I found it very, very painful to read. Did you find it as painful to write?
It's strange because now I'm revisiting this first part of the book, and I don't know how I really traveled through it. I don't even know how I arrived at certain things. Like, if I feel like there must have been some sort of distance that arose when I was writing about them. And just looking at the photographs when you're in a research phase of something like this, that alone just kind of breaks you. I don't know how you really go ahead and you type after something like that. I would often go ahead and I would read, like, Ceylon after looking at photographs.
Paul Ceylon, the great poet who said that after Auschwitz, after the camps, the German language was no longer usable for poetry. He had to invent a new German to write poetry in.
Yeah, he's meant so much to me in writing this book. It was about just sort of suspending pain within language.
Now, the book is in two parts, and the second part is informed by the hopefulness of escape and the hopefulness of putting Mengele into the background. The twins have now been separated. Was it always your intention that they would re-meet?
That was what I was driving towards the whole time. But I would question it occasionally. I would question whether that was really what needed to happen in this book, because I had to wonder if it was my own longing for a happy ending that was overriding what it needed to be. But ultimately, I was always, always writing towards that last line. Those last lines made dwelling on the experiments and dwelling on the aftermath and all the loss and all the grief bearable for me. I always pictured that in mind, that sentiment.
Let's hear the last three lines of the book.
Let's try again, Stasha said. I didn't need to finish her sentence. I knew what she meant. We had to learn to love the world once more.
We had to learn to love the world once more. Now, we more or less know from the first page of this book that these characters are survivors. We're not talking about spoilers here. I would say that the subject of matter itself precludes spoilers. Some people survived and some people did not. And in a certain way, the people who did not survive are no different from the people who did survive. They all went through an experience that was unprecedented in the world's knowledge. So the book becomes an act of what? Recollection, penitence, refusal to forget, yes?
Yes, that was my hope, especially refusal to forget and remembrance. That was foremost in my thoughts as I wrote this.
Were members of your family caught in this terrible Holocaust?
Not that I'm aware of. As far as I know, we were all safely away from Poland.
By the time of... Where had your family gone?
Utica, New York.
Well.
Yes.
So you were, by that time, Americans?
Mm-hmm.
So this is the report of the family you never knew, of what might have been had you not gone out in time.
As a child, I always felt that very deeply, like the guilt of escape.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Affinity Konar about her book, Mishling. We'll continue after this short break.
This podcast is produced by nonprofit radio station KCRW. Support the podcast you enjoy by donating at kcrw.com/join. And thanks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Affinity Konar about her latest book, Mishling, the story of twin sisters subjected to the infamous Dr. Mengele's horrific experiments during World War II. Well, I was very frightened. I received an advance copy of the book, and I'll tell you, the truth is, you know, I put off reading it, and I wouldn't blame anyone who says, I don't want to encounter this material, especially not in fiction, where the intensity of emotional invention plays center stage. Now, were you afraid of that?
That people wouldn't want to read it, or...
Or that you wouldn't want
to. That I wouldn't want to.
Yes.
I think, this whole book has just been the experience of sort of delaying and dealing with my own terror. And so I was shocked when other people wanted to read it as well. I think there is no mistaking why it took me so long to write it.
Did this book need a poet to write it? Did it bring out the poet in you? I guess I feel that the experiences it's given to render are so hard to imagine in plain factual prose that only the extremities of poetry make it possible. When did you feel that you had the language, the ability to capture these experiences, which after all are not your own and not those of members of your family? They are part, I think, of our inheritance, our cultural inheritance of the worst that can happen under any circumstances, and that remains. Mm-hmm. There are competitive events since, I'm sad to say, but it remains the worst we know.
I'm not sure that I ever really truly felt confident about having the language. I just knew that I was compelled by it, and I also just sort of lived in the shadow of poets and writers of these narratives, and I knew every time I would revisit their work that I could never mimic or shadow or echo them in the least. But I hoped that I could at least bring some sort of intensity to the material that could honor what they've left us with.
You speak of having read This Way for the Gas, ladies and gentlemen, mm-hmm. which is one of the less frequently remembered mm-hmm. books by a writer who lived through the Holocaust, and mm-hmm. it's a truly unforgettable book. You mentioned Primo Levi as well. These are all writers, in a sense, whose own threatened lives, mm-hmm. Primo Levi committed suicide, brought them to the subject. Did you fear that you were taking something that wasn't yours, or was it something that you had to face?
Oh, absolutely. That fear of taking something that wasn't mine, putting my own words on it, that was responsible for many delays with the book. These are also books that I oddly read at a very young age. And I had to question my sort of immersion in them. You know, you read them at an age where books are truly able to become your world. So I had to constantly separate myself from that. I had to reread them as an adult and try to find some space that could honor them rather than even attempt to follow in the paths that they've given us.
Now, we face an ongoing difficulty. There are some books and movies that we try to keep children away from, and yet there are some aspects of human history that we would be raising zombies if we prevented children from knowing the darkness of which humans are capable. How do you feel about that subject?
Yeah, that's something that I've really struggled with because I myself was not sheltered in any way from these histories or much else. And I do think that it's so hard for me to imagine growing up without this awareness. And at the same time, I don't know that I think that children need this. It is such a painful landscape. You wonder why you would want to take their hand and lead them through this kind of territory. At the same time, it's hard to imagine my childhood without the knowledge of this.
I've been talking with Affinity Konar, author of Mischling, which means mixed blood. It's published by Lee Boudreau Books at Little Brown. Thank you, Affinity, for joining me. I was very, very powerfully moved by the book. I'm still shaking with it. It's not an easy book. You're not going to shake it off. But on the other hand, you will never forget it.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's been a real thrill to be here.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from Mischling at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to David Sobel. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Marissa Silver is our guest.
I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.